It's Sunday morning. Time for the Great Outdoors with Charlie Potter. Brought to you by the all-new Chevy Silverado and ChevyDriveChicago.com on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome to the Great Outdoors Show. Charlie Potter here, your host on WGN Radio. And hope you very much enjoy the show this morning. We're going up to Juneau, Alaska, where I've just returned from a really incredible few days of seeing the glaciers and snow-capped peaks and occasionally seeing a fish and scenery and whales and moose. No bears this time. And our guest this morning is Mark Hieronymus, who I came to know last summer. And Mark is spent 30-plus years, I guess, now in Alaska, so we call them, they call themselves natives. Maybe, Mark, are you a native yet at 30 years?
I don't know if I'd use that. I'd say I'm an indigenous Alaskan. I'm a transplant Alaska, who's been here long enough to be a sourdough. How about that?
Okay. So you were kind enough to spend a few days with me in southeast Alaska last week doing what I can only describe as being an incredibly fun experience as we went, in your words, hunting for steelhead. You don't fish for steelhead. You hunt for them. And it's not as though you're going to go and catch a salmon where you can see 300 in the river right in front of you, Mark. You really have to, it really is hunting for them. So can you tell me a little bit how you ended up in southeast Alaska? And also, I've come to find, I've had the great pleasure, Mark, of being all over Alaska, but I've come to find southeast Alaska is really the most spectacular part of it all. So maybe we just take a few minutes to talk about how you ended up there and what keeps you there, because it's certainly a paradise, and there are many people listening this morning, Mark, who will end up in Alaska at some point this summer on a cruise ship or otherwise, or are thinking about Alaska. So it's our opportunity, I guess, to give them a little bit of an education as to what they might find.
All right. Well, I came to Alaska by way of the commercial fishing industry, and first started in that in the late 80s up in the Bering Sea, and made my way through a couple of the fisheries in Cook Inlet, Prince William Sound, and ended up down here. And I owned a processing company for years down here in southeast Alaska. It sold that, finalized the sale in 2011. So from 1992 to 2011, I was here in Juneau. And what keeps me here is it's a combination of, at least in Juneau and in a couple of the other larger cities in southeast Alaska too. But the combination of just about everything you need from civilization with the convenience of wilderness out your back door. We have, absolutely astonishing salmon runs all throughout southeast Alaska, and we have amazing hunting and fishing opportunities. We have great non-consumptive outdoor opportunities as well. I mean, you saw the glaciers and the mountains and, you know, the hiking possibilities that we have. Yet at the end of the day, we have decent restaurants and we have, a Fred Meyer or we used to have a Walmart. We have places to go shop to get the things that you would need for a modern life. So just it's a crossroads of convenience and wilderness. Fairly amazing.
One of the things that I think is a bit of a misnomer, we think in the lower 48 of Alaska as this frozen tundra, and certainly when you get up to Fairbanks and Nome, it really is. But Juneau in southeast Alaska, take away the borders, and you might very well think that you were in Seattle or Vancouver.
Yeah, weather-wise, we're pretty close. We're actually on the we're on the border of the temperate and boreal climates, and we have also got the maritime climate influence. So the ocean, the Pacific Ocean and the Inside Passage, all that salt water acts as a big heat sink. And so it never gets really too hot, but it never really gets too cold. We occasionally get, especially in the interior eastern portions of southeast Alaska, we get cold snaps in the wintertime where it might get down to, into the single-digit numbers or actually negative numbers for a week or so every winter. But for the most part, we average between 28 and 35 during the wintertime. Sometimes we get a whole pile of snow. In 2008, I think it was, we got over 200 inches here at sea level in Juneau. But for the most part, it's 40 to 16.
You're warmer than Chicago.
Yeah, very much so. Very much so.
One of the things, Mark, that's really struck me in the times now that I've had the pleasure of being with you is your knowledge, and it's one of the things I thought would be pretty interesting this morning to talk about, is your knowledge of this incredible ecosystem that exists in Southeast Alaska and how it has come to be really what has to be one of the world's richest, absolutely richest marine paradises. And I spend a lot of time on the radio talking about what's going on in Louisiana and the loss of the marshes and the striped bass on the East Coast. And yet, where you are, it just seems to be a great success story. So could you maybe just take a little moment to talk about the run of fish that come through Southeast Alaska and how this whole ecosystem is interrelated between the bears and the wolves and how the whole thing works. And yet here we are in 2017, and it seems to be working very well.
Well, we've got a large number of small to medium size anadromous streams. And by that, I mean streams that hold salmon, the freshwater streams that they spawn in and they rear, their young rear, go out to sea and then return back to that stream to spawn. We've got just over 5,000 of those streams in Southeast Alaska in an area that's only about 450 miles long and about 70 miles wide at its widest point. Those streams contribute great amounts of, you know, collectively of fish. And occasionally we have salmon runs in Southeast Alaska that top 100 million fish. For the most part, the streams of Southeast Alaska are undeveloped. They're unaffected by man. And that seems to be the one overriding or the one contributing factor down south. And you think about California, Oregon, and Washington, all the places that used to have great numbers of salmon, that seems to be the development has been what's kept the populations of fish down. But up here, we don't have a lot of that. And where we do, we try to think about salmon as an economy. So we try to plan things out accordingly, so we're not affecting that economy. But as the, you know, when the fish come in, they're bringing all this, they're bringing nutrients in from the ocean, basically like a large run of fertilizer for the trees almost. And the bears feed on them. The wolves do feed on them. There we have got a pile of different birds. You know, we've got eagles and ravens and seagulls and all that stuff that feed on those fish. And the bears and the wolves, as they're, they go down to the river to feed, and then they go back to, you know, they retreat back into the woods to a safe place for them to eat their fish. And in doing so, they pull those nutrients out into the landscape. And so as a consequence, you get these river valleys that are incredibly fertile, huge trees and amazing variety of life. And then as you get into the slopes of the hills, that sort of peters out to where you've got, you know, the trees are a little smaller, spaced a little further apart, might be a lot more undergrowth. But down on the valley floor where the salmon acts as a fertilizer, boy, there's life abounding.
So would it be fair to say that what exists today in Southeast Alaska did exist in the Pacific Northwest at one time? Were the Pacific Northwest rivers and California streams every bit as rich in fish life and in really in wildlife as what we see today in Alaska, but they're gone and Alaska is all that's left? Is that fair to put it that way, or were they never quite as strong?
Oh, no, they're amazingly strong. The Sacramento River had in California four runs of king salmon, four discrete runs of king salmon. It had a spring, summer, winter, and fall run. The Columbia River that borders Oregon and Washington, that river is, by all accounts, one of the most, it's a shell of itself now, but it was one of the most productive salmon ecosystems in the world. It's just we're in a situation now where we're in the rest of the salmon producing states, we're at less than 1% to about 5% of their former production, of their peak production, or their historic production.
Wow.
And in Alaska, we're still enjoying this condition that we're between, depending on who you talk to, between 80 and 100% of our historic production. As a matter of fact, in 2013, the commercial salmon harvest in Alaska was 263 million fish, I believe.
Wow.
So a quarter of a billion. And for the most part, those are wild fish. There's a little hatchery influence up in Prince William Sound, and some down here in southeast in the form of chum salmon. But for the most part, those are all wild fish.
So we have a situation where Alaska, to borrow Montana's phrase, is the last best place when it comes to fish. And I guess, you know, we hear about that, Mark, and certainly over the years I've talked on the radio about what's happening in the Central Valley of California, where all those fish are now listed as endangered species. And it's hard to believe that what we see in Alaska used to take place in the lower 48. But as you just pretty eloquently described, it did. And so, Mark, let's do this. Let's take a quick break. And when we come back, I'd like to talk a little bit about what you're doing in the conservation world, because your work with Trout Unlimited is really important and also, I think, very interesting. So if you can hang on a moment, Mark, we're going to be back in just a minute. And we are visiting this morning with a wonderful guy from Juneau, Alaska, Mark Hieronymus, who I had the pleasure of spending a week with recently and had done the same thing with previously. This is Charlie Potter on the Outdoor Voice of Chicago and America, 720 WGN. And first, a message from your Northwest Indiana and Chicagoland Chevrolet dealers.
It's Charlie Potter and the Great Outdoors on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Welcome back to the Great Outdoors Show. Charlie Potter, your host, visiting this morning with Mark Hieronymus from Juneau, Alaska, where I just returned from an epic, really wonderful few days of fishing for wild steelhead in some of the most beautiful country on earth. And Mark, we'll come back to that at the end of the show. But what I wanted to do for a moment now is, you've been involved with Trout Unlimited for quite a while and have been one of their spokespersons and leaders in Southeast Alaska, and also obviously that extends to the lower 48. Can you tell us for a moment about Trout Unlimited and the work that it does and what you're trying to accomplish in Southeast Alaska for those of us who may want to go back, and for those of us who don't want to go back, at least to know why you're helping to save the world? So if you can just give us a little picture of what you're doing, how's that?
Okay, well, first off, Trout Unlimited is a nationwide organization. We've got about 150,000 plus members spread out over the states. We're a cold water conservation organization. We look after salmon and trout streams here in Alaska, and our mission is to conserve, protect, and reconnect these watersheds. And in the case up here, we don't have a whole lot of, we have a little bit of restoration that we do. There's some watersheds that have been impaired by development, things like that, where we have to go back in and try to restore the natural processes of the watershed so they can return to their potential. But what we really do is supply a voice for fish, for salmon. Salmon is a big industry here in Southeast Alaska. There's over a billion, well, just close to $1 billion in economic movement every year that's attributable to salmon, either sport, commercial, subsistence replacement, all these things that add to that value. And it's about 11% of the region's employment directly attributable to salmon. If you throw in the tourism industry, which does revolve around natural places and does revolve around salmon as well, then we've got about 25% of the region's employment and over $2 billion worth of economic movement. So fish are big business up here. And what we try to do is let people know that when it comes to other developments, when it comes to other economic contributors in the region, there's definitely room for them, but if we do develop, we have to develop responsibly with an eye out to the number one, and that number one is salmon in Southeast Alaska.
because everything moves off it, right? I mean, as we've seen in other areas of the country, you take the salmon out of the ecosystem and you start moving right up the food chain in a hurry. I mean, if salmon collapsed in Alaska, what would happen to the bears? They wouldn't do very well, right?
Yeah, they wouldn't. I mean, they're the cornerstone, the foundation for a lot of the ecosystem here. And then when you get into the socioeconomic ecosystem, when you get into our, you know, the human portion of it, they are an anchor for us. I mean, they're an economic contributor that has no rival up here right now.
Well, it struck me, Mark, when we were talking, sitting on a gravel bar, looking for a steelhead to come up the river, that Alaska's got a very different system of how it approaches its commercial fishery than certainly what we're seeing on the East Coast with striped bass. And it struck me that really Alaska has an enlightened system. So maybe if you could just take a moment to talk about how it's an absolute, you don't negotiate, they set the quotas and that's it, which is not something we're seeing anywhere else in America. We have these constant battles between commercial fishermen, sport fishermen, and as you say, Alaska understands the economic driver of fishing, whereas the rest of the country does not seem to understand the driving impact that outdoor recreation can have, which is why we always have these tug of wars between commercial interests and recreational interests. Can you just take a moment to talk about that? Because I think it helps shape the picture for the rest of the country and how we can learn from what Alaska's doing.
Well, make no mistake, we do have our allocative battles up here, but the beautiful thing about that is we still have enough fish to fight over, and that's not the case in a lot of other places. But Alaska manages, the Department of Fish and Game for Alaska manages fisheries very closely during the season. They have a management plan that they adopt. The management plan could be changed. There's a process called the Board of Fish that allows for anybody to propose changes to fisheries, to regulations, to allocation concerns, things like that. So there's a panel in place that continually travels around the state to the different areas and hears concerns in those areas and does their best to improve upon the management of those fisheries. But back to the actual fisheries themselves, they're managed real time. They're managed on escapement based goals. And basically what that means is the escapement is the amount of fish that have been both harvested and escaped up the river to spawn. And if there's not enough fish, simply put, if there's not enough fish, they will shut the fishery down, they being the Alaska Department of Fish and Game. And it's a non-injunctable closure. You can't oppose the closure. You might want to, you know, throw your arms up in frustration or rant and rail, but you can't put a stay in. You can't get a legal stay to extend that fishery to possibly cause more harm to that fishery. And so that in and of itself is a powerful tool. And the understanding is that when the state is managing the fisheries, they're managing for the conservation of the fishery and the continued input of that fishery. And so that long-term view is what I think puts us apart from most other states and areas in terms of fish management.
And obviously the other thing that sets you apart is you have the resources to do so, because Alaska realizes how important this is to its economy, whereas southern states, western states, eastern seaboard states, and frankly the Great Lakes, we don't quite have the issues you have, but it falls so much further down the totem pole that we end up not being as professional as you are. Mark, we've got about 45 seconds left, and I guess I just asked you, Trout Unlimited, how does someone, if they want to get involved or learn more about what you're doing, how would they do that, Mark?
There's two ways. You can go to www.tu.org, which is the national site. You can look into it there. That's where you can join, become a member. There's also a page for our Alaskan program here. And also we've got a website that we talk to folks about what we're calling and what a lot of people are calling the American Salmon Forest, which is the region that you fished in here, part of that region. And that website is www.americansalmonforest.org. And we're also on Facebook and Instagram, too. And you can check out what we're doing in the way of helping keep our public lands public down here and making sure that the fishing and hunting values that we have remain unchanged so that we can have them for generations to come.
Well, thank you for taking the time this morning. And I have to tell all of you listening, Mark is a wonderful, wonderful resource. And Mark, I look forward to seeing you again in the future. We've had two home run trips, and we're certainly going to keep trying. So that's Mark Hieronymus of Juneau, Alaska, who does a lot of work with Unlimited as well. Thanks for being with us this morning, Mark. And for the rest, I'll be back next Sunday morning with much more on the great outdoors. I'm actually going to be in the Prairie Pothole region of Canada this week, looking at how billions of dollars have been spent to try to preserve waterfowl and wetlands, and seeing if we can continue to have a great impact for the betterment of our environment. Thanks so much for listening. This is Charlie Potter on the Outdoor Voice of Chicago and America, 720 WGN.